everybody. Welcome to the ANN After Show. I'm Lindsay Loveridge, Executive Editor of Anime News Network. And with me, as always, is James Beckett, our Attack on Titan reviewer and general anime reviewer. Jackie is not with us this time because she is jet setting to Europe, where she's going to be for like 2 weeks. So unfortunately, she won't be here for the next two episodes. But we'll
it's not like she's missing much. I don't think anything happened in this week's episode. We need to talk about filler, right? I know. It was weird how it was like all about Sasha, like looking for food. Did I watch the right episode? I was kind of confused.
I was
expecting like a bunch of revelations, and there's just a lot of like Sasha and.
There was definitely eating things in this episode.
Yeah. Okay. So I watched the right one.
It sounds but like not potatoes that. So much. You know.
No. Those weren't potatoes.
No.
Oh no.
This was a doozy of an episode. I guess if we could summarize it at all, I would say that it was kind of a lore dump. I mean that not in a negative sense, because I think we've all kind of been waiting for these specific revelations, the true history of the Eldian Empire and its relationship with Marley. But James, so what are your lasting thoughts after watching this episode? Episode 80, right?
Oh man, I mean, being a kid in this universe sucks, I think, is my main takeaway.
Yeah,
is that if you are a child in the universe of Attack on Titan, then your life is suffering and pain and getting turned into giant kaiju things and then dying. So
this was I'm glad that
I didn't grow up there.
Yes, this is also the second episode where it seemed like there was a distinct possibility of being eaten by dogs. I don't know what is up with the show and the reoccurring theme that you might get eaten by dogs just while you're out doing your trying to live
your
life.
Or your own children.
Or your own children. Oh boy, there's a lot of children eating their parents. Like, reoccurring theme here from 2,000 years ago all the way to Aaron Yeager. So
Shakespeare would be proud. This is it's the craziest Titus Andronicus fan fiction imaginable. Someone saw Titus and was like, you know, I feel like we can make this even more extra.
So I guess to sort of set things up, you know, Aaron and Zeke, they're still hanging out in that in-between place. It's not truly
the coordinate, where
the paths are all visible. You know, they just got back from kind of reviewing memories of their father, and that introduced how Aaron through it's not time travel technically, but it follows time visions. Yeah, his ability to see the future, and also Grisha's ability to see the future through him, and how that has perpetuated the path that they're currently on. Again, this is one of those like time loop things where if you think about it too hard, it kind of makes your brain melt. So I'm like not thinking about it too hard. I just know that Grisha has information from Aaron. Aaron has information from Grisha. Aaron has information from potentially another future source if there is another Attack Titan owner, and how Aaron has basically been able to manipulate past and future time via this ability to ensure that certain things happen.
Yeah.
Both to like, he's, I guess, kept information from his dad intentionally to lead him down a certain way. So anyway, all that comes to a head when they get back to the coordinate, and, you know, Zeke has basically reconciled the fact that he's not going to get Aaron to go along with his euthanization plan. So he's
just not down for that.
Not down for that. So he's going to tell Ymir, who is the progenitor of all Titans, to make it so they can't reproduce anymore. And then Aaron, I don't know if we've got a picture of this, James, he basically degloves himself, which is like one of the grossest.
Oh no, I didn't get a screenshot of that one because the way it was animated, it was hard to like tell what was happening in still frames. But yeah, that was pretty gnarly.
Yeah, I've seen that in a movie once. I can't recall which one, but it's just like one of those things that once I learned that there was like a technical term for it, you know, degloving.
Oh no, it's the worst term too. Like the imagery and the sounds that it, you know, it's ugh. Yeah.
He also
loses his thumb too.
Theo's pointing that out. Yeah, he you know, the only way he's gonna slip out of the shackles if he just straight up tears his own thumbs off so that his hand can, you know, fit in there. But he also
it's all like a metaphor, right? It's all like mental projection because they're not, you know, they're not like actually physically in this space, but it still looks like a hurt. So yes. Aaron is nothing if not dedicated.
Yes.
His thumbs are busted up.
Yeah. So he, you know, ditches the thumbs, ditches a couple layers of skin, maybe fat, off of his hands, and then embraces Ymir and is basically like, hey, you want to fuck shit up? Are you just sick of this? Don't you just want to, like, fuck it all up? Fuck this. And,
you know, when you wish that, like, the whole world was dead, well, we can actually make that a reality.
Yeah.
And yeah, over the course of the rest of the episode, we see exactly why Ymir probably would want to see the whole rest of the world dead.
Do we have a screenshot of Ymir that we can put?
Oh, we have many screenshots of Ymir. This is an Ymir heavy episode. Let's pull him up here on the old screenshot-o-tron here.
I also want to remind everyone, like, her name's Ymir, but she is not the same Ymir as in, like, Krista and Ymir. Although there are some parallels between the stories when you think about it, Krista's Ymir was named after this Ymir, who was just a slave girl. Well, wasn't even initially a slave girl. She was just, you know, a villager, kid. Gathering water, looking
at weddings.
Like, maybe had a little dream about one day being happily married, as she witnesses a wedding during this episode.
Recently orphaned, I believe. We got that. A lot of this episode, it's very dreamlike, and so we see like a flash of like the village burning, and I assume that was like either her house or her village or something, because she didn't look very happy to see those flames going up.
Yeah, the art direction for this reminded me a lot of sort of like fairy tale imagery is what we've seen in children, which is intentional because we've up until this point only ever seen her as like a representation in books and whatnot. Like she was, you know, her receiving the Titan powers has been shown as her meeting this kind of troll looking thing at various points, but it doesn't quite go down like that. In fact,
we even see a glimpse of the little fairy book that our Ymir was reading back when she was hanging out with her sister.
No, that was Historia.
That's Historia. Sorry, I meant Historia. Yeah. Sorry. That our Historia was reading back when she was hanging out with her sister. And yeah, I think one of the running themes of this whole episode is that, you know, we've seen a lot of stories of the past, right? Either the ancient past or the more recent past from like right before King Fritz the whatever, however many King Fritzes down the line ended up walling everything off in Paradise. We've seen a lot of the myth-making and the propagandizing that Marley and the Eldians have done to sort of build up their history and to build up their kind of national pride and their hatred of each other. But I think one of the running themes in this whole episode is how the truth of it, or at least I think the closest we're ever going to get to the truth, is a lot uglier and dirtier and sadder and nowhere near as conveniently, I guess, memeable in a sense. Like this isn't the kind of story that I think would make anyone feel super proud to be an Eldian, but that's kind of how history tends to go because we see that, you know, she wasn't some beautiful beloved princess that was like born with the blood of the Titans flowing through her veins. She got accused of running off or of letting some pigs go free. And the king, King Fritz said, hey y'all, I'm the king. And if you don't fess up to who lost these pigs, I'm going to gouge out all of your eyes. And so they said, no, it's this girl.
Right.
And
she became a scapegoat.
Yeah. Well, and we were talking a little bit because both of us, now that we've gotten to like the big revelations of the story, we've started dipping a little bit into the manga just to make sure that we're, you know, kind of making sense of everything. And based on what little I skimmed in the manga, it seemed to me, or the way it was described by other readers, was that maybe in the manga, and maybe people in the chat can clarify, it seems like that she really did let the pigs go, whereas I think the anime made it a lot more ambiguous and really made it seem like they just decided it was going to be her because, you know, she didn't have anyone to defend her.
Mm-hmm.
Either way, it sucks, right? I don't think what happens to Ymir, two pigs, like I don't think anyone is going to argue that she deserves to have everything that happened to her because of those pigs that escaped.
No, like Theo also pointed out in the chat, her tongue was also cut out. So you can consider her basically mute.
A lot
of this as well. They don't show her tongue specifically, but it's like they got them all lined up to just cut out their tongues because they don't think slaves need to be able to talk.
No.
And in the same way with the pigs, they're like, well, we'll take one of your eyes because slaves don't need both eyes. But instead of doing that, they decide to do a fiction favorite, The Greatest Game.
Yeah, they just...
We're just gonna hunt you in the woods. Just run for it. And they get a couple of arrows in her. And then she comes up on a tree, which is, you know, pretty metaphoric. There's a lot of Norse myth
the tree of life. Yeah.
Yeah. So she, you know, climbs inside this giant tree, falls into a seemingly endless pit. Down there's, you know, some kind of water, and then she encounters
this thing,
which kind of looks like a spine with a sperm attached to it. That was my first impression.
Something very primordial, very.
Yeah. I've been told that it's based on an actual really early life form from the Cambrian period. So that's sort of some intentional reference as well. But it fuses with her, and that's when she gets her first Titan powers and just, you know, glorious form.
And this
awesome looking.
And again, it's so, I think, perfect for the show. And honestly, this reveal, I think, it doesn't completely relieve Attack on Titan of some of the muddier, I think, issues that have come from the way that it's used, like racial allegory and like the Eldians being kind of victimized based like on their race by the Marlians. I think some of the imagery that the show uses is still a little too thorny for it to be wielding without any problems. But I actually really did love how the origins of the entire Titan bloodline weren't based in any kind of like superiority or any kind of like nobility, or they didn't earn it. It was literally because some poor kid got hunted down like an animal in the woods by a king who could not care less about her.
Or anyone, really. One in a billion chance. Yeah, it just seemed like the result of kind of a freak accident of sorts. And Ymir, I felt awful for her during this entire thing, even though she doesn't talk, really. And she doesn't emote a ton. No one really does. Everyone's this sort of washed out. They kind of all look like they've been made of clay. The eyes are really hollow looking. There's not a lot of expression around the mouth or anything. But so she is enslaved. Her tongue's cut out. She gets these weird new powers. And the king considers it an honor of sorts that he basically decides to mate with her. He calls it his seed, which is like the grossest thing. It's just like, it always makes me cringe when
the gift, like, of his seed, you know.
And I'm like,
well, and let's be real. I mean, Ymir couldn't have been like, she was what, maybe 10 when she first became a Titan and was,
I would
weaponized.
Say like the 10 to 13 range. She was, you know,
pre-pubescent. Yeah. And I'm not going to imagine that she was that much older when the king decided that he wanted to start popping out some magical Titan heirs.
I thought when that happened too, it was like, well, maybe she's going to, we're going to actually see her express some level of joy or something when she has children. But she seems completely lost when they start handing her the infants and everything. Like, they don't show a maternal instinct coming from her at that point. And which is in line kind of with what you're saying, that she was probably a very young mother and does not know like how to care for children or have really any agency. She doesn't have any agency throughout this entire story at all whatsoever.
Well, I thought it was really pointed how, even by the end of things, right? Even when we get to the point where, you know, she's become this weapon of war to conquer all of the, you know, this kind of Greco-Roman era of civilization between Marley and the Eldians and whomever else. I'm assuming there were other tribes, right? But even by the time we get to this moment where this one random guy, who I feel like must be like maybe one of the sources of inspiration for that Helosmith that comes down later on.
That's a heroic
Marleyan that eventually topples, you know.
I didn't think of that. Like, I mean, he's obviously a prisoner of war. Like, he's dressed in the Roman style as opposed to the like Norse style that Fritz's people are dressed as, the Eldians. So,
it's so funny that, like, you know, 2,000-ish years later, the Marleyans have to come up with this kind of, as far as we know, this cockamamie propaganda story about the great and powerful Marleyan hero that was able to end the bloodline once and for all. And this flashback, and again, it's not the same guy, but this flashback, I think, really drives home how none of it is as pretty or as, you know, mythological as that. It's just some suffering anonymous soldier trying to get a lucky shot off before he gets horribly murdered. And instead, he kills Ymir instead of the king, which inadvertently, you know, I mean, who's to say whether or not the Titan line would have actually continued if the king didn't get the bright idea to try to pass down the gene to his daughters. But the point that I was getting at is that even here, right, where she dies for him, he still calls him her slave, his slave. Yeah.
They like never, she was never his mistress even, or even a concubine or any kind of higher level social status was never given to her, despite all of her contributions at this point to the Eldians. Instead, he yells at her and says, "This can't kill you. Get up. You can't die here. This isn't going to kill you." And I do wonder about that, because I feel like she could have got what we've seen from Titans up to this point, right? Is that, you know, people can live through much more extensive injury, either by transforming it into a Titan right after they're injured or healing themselves because of their Titan abilities. I don't know. I think she wanted to die.
Yeah, that's actually, I hadn't thought about that, like, super explicitly, but I think everything we're talking about, I think that makes a lot of sense. And to be honest, and I know, again, I think the wiki mentioned there's some details about her like falling in love with him or whatever, but the anime, what we get in the show, doesn't really leave any room for, you know, for her having any kind of positive or loving feelings for any of the people in her life. And so I think to me it would make sense that maybe she, you know, maybe she saw this opportunity and was like, oh, like, this is how I'll finally get to die. Like, this is my way out.
Right here. Which I think also reiterates maybe the lack of connection she probably felt with her children, too, because she didn't have a will to live strictly for them either. She was just like, I'm out.
Like, they sure felt the connection to her.
Oh, my God. So, I mean, so this scene and quite a few others from this episode were actually in the second ending sequence for Attack on Titan. You can go rewatch them and see like a lot of this is in there, only it's drawn in kind of a, like a wood cutout sort of style. And I remember watching it at that point and feeling like I had kind of a good idea about the true history just from that ending sequence. I didn't have any of this context, but I'm like, they ate somebody. And this is, they've been eating people for a long time. It was really cool ending sequence. Gross, but like cool. This is worse, probably. Now that
I
know.
Again, it's like they're kids, right? Like it's these kids who are being told by their insane father to eat your mom, kids. Eat her all up, every last bit. Because at that point, they don't know how the Titan gene gets passed down. I think eventually they must figure out
the spines. Yeah, because when he's on his deathbed, then he's like, the spines! Yeah. So they figured it out.
You're going to eat everything, every part of it. Just
King Fritz is.
And everyone in the background, too, is just like, oh, what are we doing?
Like, don't look directly at it. I'm kind of confused why there's even an audience at all. Like, why is, you know, that this isn't being done secretly with just him, them, and maybe like the guys who cut up their mom. And
well, that's how you make it okay, right? You turn it into a ritual. And I mean, even saw how, like, even though they had to do it kind of in hiding with the crew on Paradise Island, like when you turn it into a ritual and when you make it into this thing that everyone is a part of, everyone's involved, then it's not murder. Then it's just a passing down of a government position. You know what I mean? Like, this is how you, like, and that's what I think is so powerful about this episode is like, this is proof. And Aaron even says it later that like, I don't think we can really call Aaron a nationalist. Because I don't think he has any love or any respect for the Eldian culture. Like, I don't think he cares at all about being an Eldian as far as like pride or, you know, I'm going to do this for the sake of like my fatherland. Like, I don't think he cares about any of that. I think he makes
feels any attachment to humanity in any way, shape or form, which is something that, you know, we kind of find out at the end. I mean, I'm expecting for Aaron for there to be yet another like twist. You know, kind of like how he pulled one over on Zeke. I still have kind of a hard time believing that, Aaron's true end goal is just utter annihilation of everyone except for those on Paradise. Like, he's decided that everyone except for those on Paradise are his enemy, and he's just going to kill all of it.
I think he's been pulling like a Dr. Manhattan. That's kind of, that's been my guess, is like, if I be, you know, or what's his name from oh god, I just, the famous anime with the guy who becomes like Super King Dick Face so that everyone in the galaxy like unites against him.
Not
Kogias. Kogias, thank you.
Okay, everyone in the comments is like Kogias? Kogias?
Yeah,
that's not Kogias. Space, really, James.
There's space in like, that one, right?
No, there's mechas space. In it. Okay, well, if you say
oh, not space. Space. Okay, well, still.
Yeah.
Still, Lelouch, yeah. Right? Like, his whole thing at the end of that show, spoiler alert for a really famous old anime, is that he's going to become the villain of history so that, you know, everyone else can kind of unite against him. And I think that kind of happens in Dune too at some point in one of those books. And okay. I kind of wonder if that's what Aaron's doing, where he genuinely is going to be like, I'm going to kill all of you guys.
So you think he's going to try and unite the world that is currently like attacking Eldians and Marleyans and everything, and like to stop all of that, they'll just focus solely on him. And then once they defeat him, there'll be peace. Is that kind of what you're postulating?
I think it's one of those things where as I've been thinking about it, like, I think what Aaron feels like he's trapped in, and I think, you know, as far as the world of the story goes, like this, the whole idea, the concept of war, and the show kind of clumsily frames it as, you know, people are always going to hate the Eldians no matter what, which
right,
that's a hard sell. But I think Aaron is basically stuck in this mentality of, well, as long as other like nations exist, and as long as this concept of war exists, then the fighting won't stop, right? And at some point or another, either we're going to be attacked or we're going to have to attack people, and it's never going to end. And so I think that, and whether or not it's intentional, right, that his, you know, potentially Dr. Manhattaning of it, I think his mentality is, well, how do we stop war? We get rid of all of the other parties that could conceivably make war. But I think the flip side of that is, how do you stop war? Is you give all of the other parties a reason to stop fighting each other. And whether or not, you know, whether he becomes like a reverse scapegoat in the same way that Ymir was back when this all began, right? He allows himself to be the one that everyone blames and everyone hates and everyone targets.
Oh, yeah. Thematically, that makes sense. Thematically, that makes a lot of sense. It would also be like a callback to the scene in this episode where everyone points the finger at Ymir over the pig pens. It would just be everyone pointing the finger at Aaron. I mean, I think that's a logical place for the narrative to go. I don't know that it would be like the grand conclusion to no more war in this world ever, because I mean, right. Aaron's gonna die eventually, right? He's gonna lose his Titan powers even eventually. So I mean, you could take those powers with him as well. One of the ideas that I threw around last time we were talking about the show was that Aaron was planning to devour all of the Titans so he would contain all of the powers, and then he could just go die and then they wouldn't exist anymore. That could also fit into sort of what you're suggesting as well. I wouldn't hate that conclusion, I think. No idea if it's real.
I think it's one of the only ways you can make Aaron's character feel, I mean, he's still being childish, right? I think, you know, I think, like you said, the idea that you could end war or end conflict like this and protect everyone forever with such a grand gesture as, you know, like literally throwing a temper tantrum big enough to kill the whole world. I think he is still being a child, but I think it would also explain why he's had to play things so close to the vest, because he would need every one of his friends to believe that he really is hell bent on destroying the world in order for this whole, you know, if that was his plan, and I genuinely don't know, like I somehow been able to avoid spoilers for the ending for years. And if that is his plan, that's one of the only ways that I could see, I guess, Hajime Isayama finding a way to sort of have his cake and eat it too, where Aaron gets to be, you know, this literally demonic monster while also finding a way to make his story not completely nihilistic. I don't know.
Yeah. Where this episode leaves off, it just seems like Aaron is trying to just burn it all down, right? The only way to like right all the wrongs is to burn it all down and start over. But for some reason, still with the exception of the people on Paradise, I guess because he still cares about them. There was a really
he knows them.
Because he knows them, I guess. Yeah. But I mean, yeah, he there's a really funny scene when Aaron is resurrecting and Armin is like turns to Mikasa and he's like, he's on our side. You know, we won and Aaron's on our side. And I swear it's like 3 to 5 minutes later, he's like, oh no, he's gonna destroy the entire world. Oh no.
Why does he all of these Titans if he's just doing a little rumbling?
Yeah.
And Aaron immediately comes on the telepathic megaphone to be like, what's up, world? I'm gonna kill all of you. Bye. Like,
yeah.
I'm also this eldritch worm Titan monster thing, so have fun with that.
Yeah. There's this he kind of becomes the giant spine thing that you can see in the opening sequence of this season. Like, you see it in his eyeball, I think, real quickly in the opening. There's what looks like a giant rib cage, and that's, you know, whatever Aaron's turning into at this point. We will continue talking about this here in a minute, but we do have a word from our sponsors. So if everyone would just stick around, we've got a few quick ads and then we'll be right back.
Now for a quick word from our sponsors. Quest, thirsty skin and leave it feeling satin and smooth with Wang Melrose Place Body Cream. It's fast absorbing to nourish your skin when you need it most. Hydration that lasts, preventing dryness. And it's high quality, nourishing ingredients like squalene, coconut oil, kupuasu butter, and coconut oil. And turn your shower into an escape with the gentle skin softening Wang Melrose Place Body Cleanser. It balances your skin without stripping it or leaving unwanted residue. Gently cleanses and nourishes at the same time with a luxurious lather. There's skin softening oils in a hydrating blend and also high quality nourishing ingredients like jojoba seed oil and rose hip oil. All right, to experience the new Wang Melrose Place Body Cream and Body Cleanser, your body, your way, go to theouai.com and use the code BLEAV, BLEAV, to get 15% off your entire purchase. That's 15% off your entire order at theway.com, code BLEAV. So go over there now. Also, what's more important than peace of mind? Nothing. And that's what NordVPN is here for, to give you peace of mind while you are online. With all the threats that you face today on the internet, it's more important than ever to be sure that you have the best VPN you can get. NordVPN is the world's best VPN service, offering the fastest connectivity, most servers, and next-gen encryption to make sure that everything you do online stays secure. Plus, you can use NordVPN on all of your computers and devices, no matter the operating system. With NordVPN's unlimited bandwidth, you never have to worry about a slow connection either, and plans start at under $4 a month. So, you grab your exclusive NordVPN deal by going to nordvpn.com/believe or use the code BLEAVE, that's BLEAV, to get up to 70% off your NordVPN plan, plus one additional month for free. It's also risk-free with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee.
All right, we're back. Thanks for sticking it out.
I know I've made this joke before, but I really do think that... especially based on that last screenshot there, if anyone could use him a nice skincare regimen, it's probably Aaron at this point. I think he's struggling a little bit.
We've seen him physically transform quite a bit over the last two episodes. I mean, he got the man bun and everything when he was reintroduced in the season, but his anger seems to be actually changing his face in quite a few scenes. This doesn't even look like Aaron. If you told me this was a screenshot of Aaron, I would be like, no, it's not. Like, who is that guy? That kind of looks like Beast Titan.
Is this the bad guy from Insidious 5? he looks like a demon, right? Like a monster. Like he's abandoning his humanity, I think.
I mean, we saw him get real. A lot of people got really contorted last episode, including Aaron, but also like Grisha with going insane and everything. And yeah, he's just turning into real, real ugly dude.
I mean, anger also gives I'm pretty sure I have the screenshot. Yeah, anger also gives Ymir a face. So that is in and of itself, I think, a testament to the transformative power of anger.
These faces are so like meme-y. I can't.
I get it. It's like a lot, right? Like it kind of reminds me of like old like kind of woodcut paintings and stuff. You know, like very
Yeah.
Very theatrical, very broad, but I mean, given the nature of the story, I get it.
Yeah. And I did feel good for her here in that, like, she's finally, because she's basically been a slave to the royal family in the afterlife at this point. Like, she died and then was still being commanded around to fulfill whatever, you know, they thought she needed to do to create the Titan forms, to alter them, to whatever. It's like, God, let this girl sleep, man.
Well, and how sad, and honestly, this is one of those things that I think really shows how, I mean, for all of its faults, and it's not a perfect story, but I think Attack on Titan is so well constructed, and there's so much going on just thematically and just narratively, right? Even if we toss away all the allegory and stuff, like, something that's been really getting to me is, you know, a lot of times back in the day, people would, like, make fun of the Titan designs, right? Because they look so bizarre and so out there and so kind of intentionally, sometimes even comical, right? They have, like, goofy, like, Garfield faces.
And then they'd be running like this or something. And it was,
then when you realize that, I mean, they're all being sculpted by some traumatized little girl out of sand. Like, they're literally just the sand sculptures of a kid. Yeah. Which I think explains why they look so goofy, but also, like, that's just, for thousands of years, she's just been doing this work and, again, used as a tool, even in death. She doesn't even get to be free when she dies.
So now I know why the Colossal Titan's head is, like, so small compared to the rest of his body.
You show me a 12-year-old that can get proportions down on their first try. Like, you know, like,
my 5-year-old's version of, like, human anatomy is like an egg torso, and you got stick arms, stick legs, you put the face in the torso, and then he draws a scribbly cloud on top for hair. So
I would believe you if you told me that there was a Titan that had that exact anatomical layout. They just look like Grimace, like a fleshy Grimace.
Yeah. Yeah. So I guess where this episode leaves off is Aaron is transforming into some crazy thing, just crazy, like, his spine thing is reminiscent of the being that connected with Ymir in the tree, but, you know, huge. We haven't really seen his, like, final form. I'm assuming it's just gonna be, like, the tallest Titan, like, ever or something like that. The wall Titans have woken up. All the walls have all come down, which also felt symbolic at the time. Like, he's lowered all of the walls, and Paradis is now a free flowing area, and those Titans
are all just imagining Reagan going, "Mr. Gorbachev, no, that isn't what I meant. Not those walls.
Not those ones. Not the ones with the man-eating Titans in them." All those Titans are marching on towards the mainland, Marley, everywhere. But what we kind of saw from the episode preview is that all those crazy Titans that have just been running around, you know, eating people, I think they're going to just also descend on Paradis, because now there's no walls to keep them out, right? They're still there, right?
Yeah, because Zeke's obviously lost the plot. I don't think Zeke is going to be controlling any more Titans necessarily. I don't know if I got a picture of it, but I'm pretty sure in that I didn't. But
when there's Aaron, Aaron's head on the spine though.
When he's radio broadcasting out to all of the subjects of Ymir, I'm pretty sure we saw Pyxis standing there amongst the crowd. And we saw Falco for sure, like, just kind of laying down like Yamcha. At least I think it was Falco. But I think that's maybe implying that all of those, like, people that got juiced with Zeke's spinal wine there's still enough of them left to maybe bring them back, but I don't know.
Okay. So it's not the pure Titans that, you know, were people that got in the back of the neck and then pushed onto Paradis. It's actually the soldiers that got awakened instead. Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah. That kind of gives us some extra time though to talk about some other shows, because even though we got a lot of lore this time, I feel like there wasn't as much maneuvering or, like, big themes to kind of expound upon. So James, what would you rather, you said you're not up to date on Ranking of Kings. So I haven't got to talk about it in a couple weeks. If y'all aren't watching Ranking of Kings, you should be watching Ranking of Kings. This week's episode was about as brutal as Attack on Titan episode typically is. It was dark and awful and hard to stomach, but
expertly animated. I feel like with Ranking of Kings, it's even harder to stomach because the art style in the world feels so whimsical on the surface.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Without spoilers, I would just say, like, content warning, there is a dead baby. So.
Oh.
Just.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah. It's real awful. It's real awful. We won't do that one since James hasn't seen it, but James also reviews Demon Slayer for us, and that is gearing up. The Entertainment District arc is gearing up for his 45-minute finale this weekend. So I am up to date on that. I just watched, I was two episodes behind, but I watched them yesterday or the day before, and wow, I can't believe they made an entire season out of a single battle. But in fairness, it's been pretty.
Nick did try to warn us.
Nick did try to warn us.
Did warn us.
Yeah. As far as that show goes, you know, it's mostly been Tanjiro, Zenitsu, Inosuke, Uzui, trying to fight what was originally Daki, but now is Daki and her brother with a really creepy waistline.
Yeah, Gyutaro. Yeah, he's got the there we go. I got the perfect shot of Gyutaro right there. He's
more a corset in a past life, I think.
Yeah, I was gonna say that goes beyond like pear shape. He's going like full on. I don't even know what that is. Like stuck together.
Do you think it's harder to decapitate him or to just like cut him down like through the middle? Because I feel like his waist is probably thinner than his neck, even just looking at this picture.
Yeah, I'm not sure exactly how he's standing upright at any point, but that's fine. I guess we'll let him be.
He's a demon. He can just do that. Yes. His voice though, James.
Yeah.
Do you think you could imitate it at all? Because like the cadence to his voice is something.
Oh, I genuinely don't think I could.
So I was like, so nice. Yeah. Sort of. Creaky thing.
He sounds like an evil witch from like the Wizard of Oz.
Yeah.
If that evil witch smoked a shit ton of meth. Like, that's like, I don't like a strung out witch is like the closest, like a crone in rehab. Like it's such a, I feel bad for his vocal cords. Every time he talks, I'm like, oh, the damage you're doing.
You have to drink like a lot of water for that performance. Yeah, I've been enjoying like all the action as far as, you know, the spectacle of the show is amazing. I think Uzui is probably one of the cooler like supporting characters we've had in a while. I like his flashiness. I like how the fireworks go off like when he attacks and things like that. But I do feel like I'm kind of done with this fight. I feel like they've won like three times and they just keep not technically winning, but they did. And I don't know.
I was going to say, careful, Lindsay. Remember, if you say anything critical about Demon Slayer ever, that means you hate it and don't understand it. And obviously don't appreciate the impeachable masterpiece that this season long fight scene with a sexy prostitute and her like her hot topic Danganronpa crossover brother is and I say that with love. I joked with my wife that Gyutaro is basically what would happen if like one of the Homestuck trolls got transported into Danganronpa, and I'm gonna stick by that.
I think that's pretty apt description. And to the people who think we hate it, it's just, you know, this franchise has made so much fucking money. You guys, it doesn't matter whether
we're punching down here like that. Okay.
It's doing fine. It's doing great. UFO Table is creating a great show. People enjoy it. It's fun to watch. But sometimes there are aspects that are kind of annoying. And it's okay to say that because it still has billions and billions of yen. You know, I'm not hurting its bottom line at all. It's fine. It's immensely popular and no one's going to quit liking it because I think the fight went on too long.
And look, I'm on the record for saying that every single animator working at Ufotable and anyone else that got like outsourced, and really every animator in the industry, but like, you know, as long as we're talking about Demon Slayer, they are doing insane things with this show. Like this is, I mean, this episode right here is probably the single best looking episode of television animation I've ever seen, just on a purely technical level. Yeah. I think I've seen shows that I think are more expressive with their character animation. I've seen shows whose aesthetic I like more, but if I'm talking about just the sheer amount of raw flexing craftsmanship, I don't think I could point to a single frame and complain about much. Like, oh, okay. The really realistic CG fire is maybe a bit awkward looking with the 2D models. Yeah. Okay, sure, whatever. Yeah. But we're sure.
like that occurred to me while watching, and I probably only noticed it because there was so much fire.
Yeah. Just
so much that you couldn't like not notice it. But yeah.
Yeah. But that's like such
a small quibble.
The show looks amazing. And if you want to have fun watching a cartoon, watch Demon Slayer. Like, I don't think anyone is out here saying that if you like pretty action and excitement and like, you know, fun shows, that you shouldn't watch Demon Slayer. But when I compare this show to like the Fast and the Furious, people think I'm insulting you. And that's just not true. I like the Fast and the Furious.
There's like 8 of those. If they were bad, they would have stopped making them. People obviously like them, right? Yeah.
But a Fast and the Furious 10 was, let's see, 20 minutes times 10, 5 hours long.
Okay.
Yeah. If Fast and the Furious 10 was 5 hours long, and in between the 45 minutes worth of admittedly cool car chases, we had to watch Dom and the rest of the Fast crew scream a lot and go on and on about their frankly trivial character dilemmas, I would also be like, all right, guys, what are we doing? Do we really need...
Can we get a helicopter in here or something? I mean, please. someone give one of them a chainsaw. Let's get this going.
Where's the Rock? Why can't Vin Diesel make nice with the Rock? I need the Rock back. Like...
Yeah.
If Tanjiro's woe is me, I need to be stronger to beat up this creepy guy. If that was like maybe one or two episodes, sure.
That is wearing on me really hard.
It's annoying. It's annoying, and it also it's the kind of thing that it's the kind of conflict that you can find in literally any other manga hero with this Shonen Jump demographic and style. Like, it's
self-pitying, I need to get better sort of thing.
Does it ruin the show? No. Does it mean you shouldn't watch it? No. Do we want to hear Tanjiro bemoan that he's not as good at fighting as Uzui for like 5 straight episodes? Not really. Like, maybe give Zenitsu something to do other than be asleep, or give freaking Nezuko some lines that aren't in a dream and or flashback and or whatever Zenitsu's weird fantasies are. Like, I don't know, man.
Speaking of Zenitsu, I was trying to explain it to my husband because, you know, he's only powerful when he's asleep. It's like he's sleepwalking swordsman, right? You know, like that's when he's most capable, is when he's like in a zen sleep state. And he was asking me like, well, how come he can talk if he's asleep? I'm like, I don't know, Matt. This is a Shonen Jump show. Just like, because it would be difficult to communicate tactics with him while he's asleep if he couldn't talk, I guess. But
yeah, or he's like in a trance, or
yeah,
it's like a dormant personality, or you know, whatever. He's not annoying. That's what matters. Is he's not annoying.
Yeah, he's been very enjoyable. Last episode, he was great. He did a lot of really cool stuff. I thought the like zippy zappy move effects were actually pretty cool.
That's one of my favorite. I think it was the last review where I love how, and I want to say that a lot of this probably comes down to Ufotable because the manga is in black and white, but I love how all of the characters kind of have their color coding that extends out into their moveset. And that's not like it's not the first show to do that, but obviously I think depth of color and the blending of color is something that the studio does really, really well. Like, it's so vivid and so lush that when Zenitsu zip zaps across the screen, like it feels like lightning. I love that. Yeah. That's one of my favorite effects.
Yeah. still would have liked like more Inosuke. Oh, well, actually, no way. We did get a big Inosuke moment last episode. Yeah. Literally sawing through a lady's neck, like took both of his jaggedy looking blades and was like, he called it a special move, but it was, that was gross and cool. But,
well, and then we learned that he survived getting stabbed in the heart because he can just rearrange his organs at will. It's just a thing he can do. And yeah, I get it that it foreshadowed it with him being able to dislocate like every joint in his body.
Oh, that's true. Yeah, when he wormed around. And,
But the thing about organs is that generally speaking, there's only enough room for what you've got. There's not a lot of wasted space in there. And the tubes that connect things together are pretty tight. There's not a lot of slack in the veins. You know what I mean? It's like the heart can just like jump rope around inside you.
I mean, going back to corsets, because we were talking, I mean, that was one of the things that was associated with like extreme corsetting is that it would damage or permanently alter the organ placement, which means like it was more difficult to breathe because the lungs would get really cramped because everything else that was supposed to be down in the gut was up in the chest, you know? So I don't know where he could have moved his heart to or how, where, you know, did it just kind of like loop out and around on the other side of the rib cage or something? I mean, I don't know.
And he didn't immediately die of a stroke from his veins, like from the blood pressure. Like, and again, I don't actually care that much, right? It's a fantasy, like who cares? But
I
think to your point, it's like, not only does it not make a lot of physical sense, and you'd think that if he moved his organs around, it would cause a lot more damage than him just being up and able, ready to fight again. But I think it points back to like what you were complaining with earlier when it comes to the fact that it's getting a little irritating how often the story goes back to these wells. And if Demon Slayer is just repeatedly going to be like, oh no, Inosuke got hit, never mind, he's fine. Or, oh no, Zenitsu's asleep, but never mind, he's actually better at fighting now.
Yeah.
It doesn't, like,
it messes up the stakes, right?
Yeah.
Like, you don't end up allowing yourself to get invested in the tension because, you know, whatever the result of the tension is, it will just get reset. And I know that's, like, a general complaint for Shonen Jump stuff in general that, you know, protagonists are never going to actually die and everyone's going to come out fine. I mean, maybe Uzui won't get his arm back, which, you know, that's too bad, but
he's got three wives. Like, he's got three wives. He'll be fine.
Yeah. I was talking, I think it was with Nick or some people in a Discord earlier today, and they said their favorite thing about Uzui and his three wives is the reaction to it is generally like, fuck you, you have three wives. Like, just angry at him for being so greedy as to have three hot wives instead of just a reasonable one or maybe two. Yeah. But yeah, the tension in the show, and especially the way that they've kind of prolonged this fight by nothing ever really being good enough over and over and over again. Like, they decapitated Daki two or three times now, at least two. I'm just wondering if I maybe have missed one in there, but they have decapitated her at least two times. And just the whole idea of Tanjiro, like, bearing his blade down on this dude's neck and just trying to cut his head off harder this time is just like, come on.
Yeah. And I think in the comments, Nick just said that I don't need anyone to die. I just need something to change or develop with the cast instead of just got to get stronger. And that's kind of where I am.
Yeah.
Like I was saying earlier in one of the reviews that I love Inosuke, but if he did die, I wouldn't actually care that much because it wouldn't really affect the story. It would just mean that the comedy scenes would be less funny because then we have is Zenitsu. But I wouldn't I don't think his absence would, I mean, it wouldn't change it wouldn't change any character arcs. It wouldn't affect my like emotional connection to the plot. I don't like, even if Tanjiro died, like I would be like, oh, that sucks. He's nice. But like, it's,
They really want you to get that emotional connection to him, though, because they keep bringing out his dead family whenever, like, things get really hard. Like, something happens, and he is facing some kind of obstacle, and then we have to see one of his dead siblings.
Wake up, big bro. You can do it.
And it's just like, you can't do that over and over and over again. Like, I felt like they should have stopped that with Mugen Train. I feel like it really peaked there with Mugen Train flashback in the, when they were like messing around in each other's like subconsciousnesses and stuff. So when they brought it out again, I was just like, come on, guys. Like, yeah, yes, that was really sad, but we can't keep milking that for sentimentality, you know?
Yeah, like you'd think by now that we could maybe get some of those reactions from his friends or his still alive sister or, you know, the little.
As far as we know, he left her sleeping in a wooden box in the middle of as buildings are burning down. I was like, that's not a safe place for her. She's going to catch on fire there. You can't leave her there. That's not.
Yeah, she'll be fine.
I know.
She also, is. The worst thing that can happen to her is she freaks out a little bit and turns into a baby. So she'll be fine.
She's currently toddler right now. I think she's all cute and small, and please give her more things to do. I feel like maybe two arcs ago, they should have got it to a point where she could talk. Like,
or at the very least pantomime, like, I don't know, like interact with, and people always complain that why would you expect her to blah, blah, blah? She's a demon in the lore of the story. Like, no, what I'm saying is that if she's going to be a character in the story, she should have I should be able to tell you whether or not she likes Inosuke and Zenitsu, or whether or not she feels responsible for protecting them, or whether or not she wants to turn human again, or if she even understands I don't know any of those things. She's like a doggy that, she's an attack dog with boobs.
We're down to the last 5 minutes, so it's probably too late to ask the question of why, now that I think about it, can't she talk? All the other demons can talk. Why can't she talk?
Something incomplete transformation. I don't know.
Maybe.
I'm sure it got explained at some point, but it's not like it's not like the story cares all that much. And again, I feel like it can be easy to harp on the things that the story isn't really doing that well, because so much of what it does well, you can just say in a couple of sentences. The fights are amazing.
Yeah.
The animation's great.
Yeah.
Inosuke is a good boy.
Yeah. I'm thinking the next arc will probably at least get to learn a little more about the other Hashira, they have more interesting character designs even. So I'm hoping that maybe there's personalities to go with that.
I like Yuzui-fan. I feel like he, I care a lot more about him than I ever cared about Flamio. So, I hope he gets to retire with his hot ninja wives. Like, he's earned that, I think.
Yeah. If he doesn't get his arm back, let him just go live a flashy life out in the mountains somewhere. I don't know.
Literally has three wives that can just feed him grapes all day. Again, he'll be fine. He'll be fine.
Yeah. All right, James. I think that kind of wraps it up for this week. Next week, we're going to have more Attack on Titan. I don't think Jackie will be back quite yet. She's still going to be in Europe, making me really jealous. So maybe the week after that. Does anyone know how many episodes of Attack on Titan we're getting? Is that established? Is that confirmed?
I don't think it was at the beginning of the season, and I'm not sure if they've announced anything. I know people are still, I'm sure they're keeping that close to the vest because they probably don't want to announce the movie until, the season's just about done.
Yeah.
So I would imagine we probably have we're on episode 10. So we probably have a few more. I'm guessing it's going to go to episode 13, and then we're going to get a surprise movie announcement for, I don't know, December or something. But
people are telling us 12. Because I'm bad at numbers, I can't remember what number we started at. I only know that we're at 80. So how many have we already done? 4? 5? Does anyone remember? What is time anymore?
So we started at 76, I believe.
Okay. So 4. We've only done 4. So we've still got a long ways to go. Oh, okay. Okay, five. Yeah, we still have a long ways to go. We're only about midway there. Yeah. So, you know, who knows what's going to happen other than everyone who's read the manga. No spoilers. All right, everybody. Thanks for tuning into the after show. We are here on Mondays at 6 p.m. Eastern. No, 6 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Eastern. It's later on the other side of the world and country. So we'll be back next Monday with more Attack on Titan. Make sure to subscribe if you want to keep following along with this conversation. We are live on YouTube, Facebook, and Twitter. And you can also catch us on YouTube afterwards, or the podcast-only version, audio-only version, goes up on Tuesdays. I'm really bad at this, you guys. Like, every week. I've been doing this for like a year. Every week. Goes up on Tuesdays on AnimeNewsNetwork.com. You can also find us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, you know, whatever you use to find your podcast. We are up there. And I want to thank James again for joining me on this journey. Hopefully, I don't know. I'm still rooting for Aaron a little bit. Like, I don't know. I can't give up hope yet. So
I at least get it. I get why he's mad. I don't think he should genocide the whole world, but, you know, I get why he's mad.
We've all felt that way at least once, you know? Yeah. Might have been high school for me, but, you know, we all grow at different rates.
And he actually has the power to do it. And who's to say what I would have done when I was a moody 17-year-old mad at the world?
Oh, yeah. I'm really glad I didn't have those sorts of, for real. All right, everybody. We'll see you next week. Bye.
Bye-bye.